The health department denies the COVID-19 surge in the Philippines has already reached its peak. Presidential spokesperson Harry Roque insists there is no evidence linking President Duterte to the Davao Death Squad. Senator Manny Pacquiao announces his presidential bid, while Vice President Leni Robredo says she is ready to become the opposition standard bearer. We'll tackle the latest developments in the 2022 race with the former dean of the Ateneo School of Government, Tony Lavinia. And tributes pour in for former Social Welfare Secretary Dinky Soliman. Hi, I'm Karina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us, and for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with a warning from the Health Department. The latest COVID-19 surge in the Philippines has yet to reach its peak. The DOH is refuting the Okta Research Group's recent statement, which cited the country's first weekly negative growth rate since May. But Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergere says other experts believe that peak could happen next month.
When you say it's a peak kasi, there is this highest number cases reported, and then there's this decline in the number of cases. But right now, we cannot see that yet in our numbers. For now, we do not see that this is the peak yet. We like to be very careful in declaring that this is the peak because we are still seeing the rise in the number of cases.
Meanwhile, COVID-19 Special Advisor Dr. Ted Herbosa believes Okta's predictions are mostly applicable for Metro Manila.
Ito ay nagmamatch na sa sinasabi ng mga direktor ng mga COVID hospital na sa totoo lang yung mga pasyente nila ay hindi na nanggagaling sa NCR at nanggagaling na sa mga Cavite, Laguna at ibang mga karating na lalawigan. Yung sa UP COVID-19 pandemic at saka DOH naman, sinasabi hindi pa tayo nagpipeak at mukhang aabot pa ng mga 30 or even 40,000 cases in a day.
The Philippines recorded 19,271 new infections Sunday, bringing the nationwide tally to 2,366,000. The number of active cases stands at 178,000. 205 new deaths and 25,000 recoveries were also recorded. More than 90 areas in Metro Manila are currently under a granular lockdown. That's according to Police Chief General Guillermo Eleazar. He says nearly 37,000 residents have been apprehended for violating the minimum health, public health standards in the first 3 days of the new quarantine system.
44% of them dun sa past 3 days or yung 36,854, ito ay binigyan natin ng ticket. While 6% ito hindi nila sa police station para aarestuhin for other offense.
A group of restaurant owners hoping government can further loosen indoor dining restrictions in Metro Manila soon. Under alert level 4, restaurants can only operate at 10% capacity. They're also limited to serving fully vaccinated customers. But Resto PH says this is not enough to cover costs.
For now, we are happy with 10%. Inobserbahan din po naman namin. Yes. Pero pag gumandas po sana, mapunto po kami sa alert level 3 para tumasa po yung capacity na allowed, pati po yung mga empleyadong hindi po bakunado, pwede na pong pumasok. So, yung mga restaurant, hindi naman po magpa-profit talaga at 10%. Pero para lang po may cash flow for salaries.
The Philippines receives an additional 5 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines. A donation of over 2 million shots of the Pfizer drug arrived late Sunday night from the WHO's COVAX facility. These will be distributed to the regions with the most number of COVID-19 infections.
View the vaccines as a critical component, particularly now that you're having this surge largely driven by the Delta variant. The Pfizer vaccines are coming at an excellent time. We know that we need to protect especially our elderly citizens And still we are concerned that there are about 3.5 million elderly citizens who have not even accessed one dose. We urge everybody who receives these vaccines to prioritize the elderly, the comorbid, so that we can save as many lives as possible.
In addition to this, 3 million more doses of the Sinovac drug arrived Sunday. So far, the Philippines has received more than 60 million COVID-19 vaccine doses. Nearly 18 million people in the country have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Brazil reports over 150,000 new COVID-19 cases in a single day. Officials are blaming the unusually high number of new infections to an adjustment in how case numbers are tabulated. Around 92,000 of the new cases occurred in Rio de Janeiro in recent months, but only entered the official count in the last 24 hours. At least two other states, that's Paraiba and Sao Paulo, also reported high jumps in cases due to the change in the case count system. In other news, President Rodrigo Duterte is set to participate in high-level talks at this week's United Nations General Assembly in New York. Malacanang says President Duterte will be advancing Philippine positions such as universal access to COVID-19 vaccines, climate change, human rights, and international and regional security developments. The General Assembly will follow a hybrid format of in-person and virtual participation due to the ongoing pandemic. The International Criminal Court's investigation into the Duterte administration's war on drugs can still move forward, even without the Philippine government's cooperation. That's according to Raul Pangalanan, a retired International Criminal Court judge. He says witnesses can be flown to The Hague if ICC prosecutors will be barred from entering the Philippines. He adds evidence can also be gathered virtually.
The case can move forward up to the filing of the charges and up to the confirmation of charges without the presence of the accused, if the accused refuses to take part. So it will move forward up to the up to that moment, which is the final moment before trial, which is the confirmation of charges by a pre-trial chamber. And then the charge remains there. The warrant of arrest remains valid. All member states have a duty to surrender, to arrest and surrender the accused if he is within their jurisdiction. If you look at the terms of Article 127 of the Rome Statute, we do have a continuing obligation to of what we call judicial cooperation.
For presidential spokesperson Harry Roque, there is no evidence linking Duterte to the vigilante killings committed in Davao City during his term as mayor. Those killings will be included in the investigation of the International Criminal Court.
From my own investigation, while I confirmed the existence of the Davao Death Squad, I found no evidence that then-Mayor Rodrigo Roa Duterte was involved. We went to the site where they allegedly buried mass bodies. We conducted a dig with Peruvian anthropologist Jose Pablo Braibar, and we only found the skeleton of a dog.
Roque also insisting he deserves a spot at the United Nations International Law Commission. Several groups are opposing Roque's nomination. They say he is unfit for the role for his defense of the Duterte administration's bloody war on drugs.
My decision to become spokesperson is largely because of a sense of gratefulness that this president certified as urgent all my priority bills. They criticize the president for being inconsistent with human rights. Well, I have news for you. Had he not certified universal health care, we wouldn't have free vaccines today. And tell me, is that contrary to human rights? Certainly not.
Well, tributes continue to pour in for former Social Welfare Secretary Dinky Soliman. She passed away Sunday morning. And as this report tells us, Soliman is being praised for transforming the agency she headed under two administrations. Take a look.
Vice President Lenny Robredo confirmed on Sunday morning the passing of former Social Welfare Secretary Dinky Soliman. She was 68.
Soliman was part of the cabinet of the previous administration, along with Robredo's late husband, former Interior Secretary Jesse Robredo.
Very, very close kami kay Secretary Dinky. Nung namatay yung asawa ko, pumunta sa Naga para samahan kami ng mga bata habang hinahanap pa yung katawan ng asawa ko. Napakalungkot ka, Eling Balita, yung pagpanaw niya. Napakabuting tao. Buong buhay niya, dinevote niya talaga sa paninilbihan sa mga mahihirap.
Soliman was last seen in public at the wake of former President Noynoy Aquino last June. Former Presidential Peace Advisor Teresita Delis didn't think this would also be the last time she would be seeing her dear friend.
Yung huli namin sinabi, nag-agree kami as soon as she had her second dose. Magkikita kami, face to face. Malaking kalungkutan because I knew that she was going through a bad itong huling linggo.
Delis says Soliman was diabetic and shares the cause of her death.
It was a series of fluid health challenges talaga since last year until July na nung nagkasunod-sunod yung mga health crisis niya. Renal failure complicated with heart disease.
Soliman first served as DSWD Secretary under the administration of former President Gloria Arroyo. She, along with other members of the cabinet, resigned in 2005 following the Hello Garci scandal that stemmed from allegations of poll fraud. Under the Aquino administration, Soliman became known for her efforts to assist calamity victims and for widening the scope of the Pantawid Pamilyang Pilipino Program, or 4Ps, the conditional cash transfer program of the government.
People to remember her. We remember her as our sunflower, and it was so appropriate. It's always our Miss Optimist, always looking, seeing what was good, looking at the possibilities, looking for what was good in people.
The Department of Social Welfare and Development expressed its condolences to the family of its former head and touted her various accomplishments in the agency. Current DSWD Chief Rolando Bautista also paid tribute, saying Soliman's remarkable stint in the department from 2010 to 2016 greatly reshaped the landscape of social welfare and development. Also extending their condolences, former presidential spokesperson Edwin Lacerda, who called Soliman the smallest member of the cabinet but with the biggest heart, and former finance chief Cesar Purisima, who called her the epitome of a selfless, honest, and competent public servant.
Again, to the Soliman family, our deepest condolences. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, we'll speak with political analyst Professor Tony Lavinia. We're going to talk about his take on how the 2022 presidential election is shaping up. Stay with Dateline Philippines. You're on ANC. Back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The health department denies the COVID-19 surge in the Philippines has already reached its peak. Presidential spokesperson Harry Roque insists there is no evidence linking President Duterte to the Davao Death Squad. And Senator Manny Pacquiao announces his presidential bid, while Vice President Lenny Robredo says she is ready to become the opposition's standard bearer. And tributes pour in for former Social Welfare Secretary Dinky Soliman. Back with more news, legendary boxer turned Senator Manny Pacquiao bracing for the biggest fight of his life. On Sunday, the Pac-Man accepted the nomination of his faction of the ruling PDP Laban Party to run for president next year. Pacquiao says his life experiences and ability to relate to the poor are among the qualities that will make him a good president.
Si Manny Pacquiao, nakasama ninyo ngayon, ay dumaan sa lahat ng klaseng sakit at sakripisyo sa buhay. Maiahon lang ang pamilya mula sa kahirapan. Panahon na upang manalo naman ang mga naaapi. Panahon na upang makabangon ang bayan natin na lugmok sa kahirapan. Panahon na ang isang malinis na gobyerno kung saan bawat sintimo ay mapupunta para sa bawat Pilipino. Malapit na kayong magsama-sama sa kulungan. Your time is up.
Pacquiao made the announcement amid the internal rift in PDP-Laban. The other faction is led by Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi and supported by President Duterte. That faction has nominated Duterte as its vice presidential bet and his former aide turned Senator Bongo as their standard bearer. The Pacquiao faction used Sunday's assembly to unveil a new logo, dropping the iconic Duterte fist.
We will formally fight back against the hijackers. We will formally declare as correct what we have been doing all along, ignoring them but resisting them. Lalaban po tayo. Yung kabila patalon-talon na partido, if convenient for them, they will join. If no longer convenient, they will destroy.
Vice President Leni Robredo makes her strongest hint yet at a possible presidential bid. Robredo says she is ready to run for president if chosen as the United Opposition's bet in the 2022 polls.
Itong administrasyon na to mag-continue beyond 2022 na si Marcos makabalik in power, yun yung malayo natin mangyari. Mm-hmm. Grabe yung corruption, grabe. At the height of the pandemic, mm-hmm. yung mismanagement ng buong pandemic nakikita natin ngayon, napakadelikado sa bansa natin na magpatuloy pa to. Alam natin kung ano yung ginawa ni Marcos sa Pilipinas. At hindi yung speculation, assurance ko sa lahat. Walang pagduda na pag ako yung unity candidate, handang-handa ako.
And just to recap, here's what we know of the 2022 presidential race. Two senators, Manny Pacquiao and Pangilo Lacson, have announced they are running. Another Senator Bongo has been lukewarm to his nomination by the PDP Laban Cusi faction. Vice President Leni Robredo said she just might. Meanwhile, the president's daughter, Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, said she'd rather seek re-election. Well, joining us now for his insights into the presidential race is the former dean of the Ateneo School of Government, Professor Tony Lavinia. Professor, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon to all your audience.
All right. First things first, Senator Manny Pacquiao declaring he is gunning for the presidency as PDP Laban standard bearer. Let's talk about that first. What do you make of that development?
It's a good development, I think, because it gives us more choices. I think at this stage, the more choices we have, the better. It certainly gives Mindanaoans an alternative to Duterte, for example. And to a Duterte candidate, I we don't know yet. As we know, I kind of suspect Carmina that Sara Duterte will be coming back to the race, and that this is just a feint or a dodge for the moment because of the internal fight within the. No doubt, there is an internal fight within the Duterte bloc because the president himself wants to run for vice president, or wants Bongo to be vice president, and and Sara is probably resisting that. But Manny Pacquiao will be a formidable candidate. He will be a charismatic candidate. His background, I mean, the introduction about him will attract, especially Mindanaoans, to vote for him. Obviously, he will be hammering on the corruption issue, and that's the weakest point of this government right now. As we have seen in the Farmali hearings, it looks like we have seen corruption in epic proportions during the pandemic, and it looks like Pacquiao will be hammering that. And other opposition candidates as well. We did hear Lenny, VP Lenny, say that right now. I mean, so the big issue is, what can a President Pacquiao offer to the public in terms of an alternative to the Duterte government?
Professor, when you talk about corruption, though, this is not the first time that it has become, or it was made, being made into a campaign issue, right? This didn't happen overnight. The massive corruption that we're seeing right now did not happen overnight. That's why it has become systemic. But how do you differentiate the fight of Manny Pacquiao against corruption, differentiate that from the other fights that came before him? I mean, we know that this was one of the pillars, campaign promises of Duterte when he was still a candidate. And yet we're seeing what we're seeing right now, Professor.
Yeah. This is, of course, a resurrected theme, but that's what it is, right? I mean, that's what elections is in the Philippines, where we are always still fighting the old issues because we have not resolved them as a country. It's sad, but that's true. So, for example, you saw there how Pacquiao connected poverty and corruption. Well, guess what? Who connected at first, right? 2010, President Aquino. But in the case of Pacquiao, there's an additional punch because, in fact, he came from rags to riches. And he's, as introduced earlier, to get to where he is now, he literally suffered, right? He literally allowed his face to be hit so many times, right? I mean, and arguably for the country, for the pride of the country. So he'll be effective in making that connection of poverty and you know, I guess his weakness will be his past history as you know, not going to work in the House and the Senate, being pro death penalty, being anti supporter of the war against drugs. That will be raised against him. But I think on the big issue of corruption and poverty, he could present a good... Now, if I were Senator Pacquiao, what I would do for the first 2 to 3 months of the campaign is to consolidate his Mindanao vote, focus on the Mindanao vote. Get that right now, that is Duterte territory, 50 to 60%. Right. Mm-hmm. He needs to grab 30 to 40%, half of that, in order to have a chance to win, because then he can start looking at other demographics, but he must convince his fellow Mindanaoans first that he's the better Mindanaoan than anyone else from the Davao group.
Professor, you know, when you talk about Senator Manny Pacquiao, you're talking about a man who had the odds stacked up against him all throughout his early life, right? But the question now is, how will he be able to translate this? You said a while ago, the connection has to be made. But apart from that connection, how will he be able to translate this into actual votes, Professor?
He will have to campaign very hard. He will have to bring himself to the masses. He has the money, so that's not a problem. But it's not about money. It's about bringing your message to the people who matter the most. Who can give you the votes. He has to attract young voters. That's very important. You know, I mean, right now, the young voters of the country that's below 30 are up for grabs for anyone. And if you ask me, the one person that wasn't mentioned in your introduction of the state of the race is Yorme. Mayor Isko Moreno, because it looks like that's a go as well. And in my view, Yorme is probably the best connection with the youth, aside from being the youngest, just being adept at social media and adept at using the language of the youth. Senator Manny would have to do that. I mean, I think he has the language of the poor, but he doesn't have the language of the youth. And that's a very important demographic for him.
Yeah, the only reason why we left Mayor Isko Moreno in that intro first, because he hasn't really formally declared
that
he was going to gun for the presidency. But here's the thing. When you talk about the background of the two, very similar, right?
Yes.
Rags to riches, that was really, you know, something that fueled them throughout their life, not just as politicians, but as private individuals as well. How will a voter now be able to differentiate these two? And what do you think will be the turning point there? Go ahead.
Definitely. And those candidates, you know, these are historic candidacies. If in fact Yorme files his candidacy, they're historic. They're really the first serious candidates that come from, you know, the poorest of the poor of this country. That's where they come from. They're not lower middle class. I mean, you have had presidents that, you know, worked hard, working students, that type of thing. But these two are very, you know, they really come from the extreme poor, from the most deprived, the most, let's put it, the most oppressed in our societies, and have real experiences of being oppressed, of being marginalized. Even now, they're looked down to by the elite, right? I mean, but the difference, the differentiation is going to be in what they will offer the country. Because, and right now what I see is, it seems like Yorme, for example, would have a vision that's more thought of because he has governed. He's actually the most experienced of the politicians that are running in this race right now.
Why do you say so? Senator Dico Soto and Lacson and Soto,
of course. They have more experience than Yorme. But otherwise, compared to Sara, compared to Mayor Sara, compared to Manny Pacquiao, compared to VP Lenny, Yorme has the most number of years of experience. Of course, incomparable to Lacson and to Senator Lacson and Senator Soto. The difference with Yorme is he actually has studied systematically as well the problems. No, he's been to Oxford, he's been to, I think, Harvard as well. He's done this systematically and looking at these things systematically. It seems to be that Senator Manny is looking at it from a very emotional point of view. But I know also that Senator Manny has gathered people around him that can help him fashion a good vision and a good platform of government. So the two will differ on platforms, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my next question. Dean, you got to talk about the people around them, right? So when you talk about Senator Manny Pacquiao, do we already know who, I mean, the advisors that he surrounds himself with? The kind of people that he listens to, is it going to be different from those that he surrounds himself with during the training for a fight, for example? We don't know yet.
Well, you know, of course, there's PDP Laban. By the way, Carmina, I just want to say that hands down, the real PDP Laban is the Pacquiao faction, because Coco Pimentel is there. And, you know, all the characters there have been in PDP Laban for 30 years. I mean, unlike the Cusi faction, where they're not really PDP Laban. They just came in when President Duterte became president and became a guest candidate. So let's be very clear about that. Let's not be fooling around that this is a real fight. No? I mean, legally speaking and politically speaking.
Yeah, but
the
professor,
people around there, it's clear.
But Professor, let's be very clear as well that these are the same people who, precisely as you said, offered Duterte then to be their standard bearer. The
exactly.
Very same people who allowed this to happen to the party.
Well, exactly. No, that too has to be that has to be conceded. So Senator Pimentel would have to explain that very clearly. But there you would have Senator Pimentel for sure. He's my classmate in UP Law and my fellow Cagayan de Oro native. I know him quite well. He's Bartop Church, brilliant. Maybe lost his way in the early years of the Duterte, but now I hope he will come back and, you know, be as strong as his father was on human rights, on nationalism and things like that. And we'll see. But there are also people, I think, around his Senate staff is quite good. I know his chief of staff is quite good. I know some of the lawyers that are working with him. I can't reveal them until they officially say so. But it's quite a group of people also that are ready, that have government experience around Senator Manny. And you will have that also with Yorme. Actually, that's no secret, because you can already see what's in the city of Manila, and that's how we will govern. And of course, there are some people that are already well known in terms of the campaign. So we will see that. I mean, and of course, this is not being cynical, Carmina, no, but the thing is that, because these are not ideological differences, right, among all the candidates, in the end, it doesn't really matter, because whoever wins will have to find people who can govern with them. That's really the case of the Philippines. I've worked with the last six, certainly since Cory Aquino time up to the present, with all of these administrations on very specific issues. And the end of the road, it's really, you know, no one can claim to be the best and no one can claim to be really the worst as individuals, right? As individuals, because, you know, people have skills, and, you know, I have skills, and all the governments, all the presidents have asked me to help them in certain places. And I do that as a matter of national,
duty.
Duty, right? For as a matter of duty. So that doesn't bother me too much. I think what would be more important is who is the person loyal to, right? So for example, China is a big factor here in making a choice. I mean, what are the positions of these candidates with respect to China? Because China, you know, whether it plays a role or not, certainly it cannot play a role officially, will want to have bets, right, in this campaign. Yes?
Yeah. Professor, how important is it for Senator Manny Pacquiao and Senator Coco Pimentel to really spell it out, to really say it, that they will hold President Duterte to account? Because we've had Senator Coco Pimentel here on the show, and he's neither here nor there when it comes to the president, almost as if afraid to utter the president's name and really venture into that path of holding him to account. So when you talk about the presidential run of Manny Pacquiao, how important is it for him to be able to put that as well as one of the issues, and not just lump it all together that he's fighting against corruption and all that, Professor?
Yeah, for me, and there could be several in the future, there are four already kind of clear litmus tests that will differentiate you from the Duterte, from being a Duterte supporter or not. The first is actually just a recent development, which is that, will you send Duterte to The Hague if an arrest warrant is issued after the election? Will you actually arrest him and send him to The Hague upon request of the International Criminal Court? That's a yes or no answer, right? And if you claim to be an opposition candidate or against Duterte, you would have to say yes, yes to that. I think number two is family. Will you go after the corruption that the family case has uncovered, and especially the people in the government, in the DBM, in the office of Senator Bongo or whoever? I mean, will you go after that? Whoever it reaches, if it reaches the president, will you go after the president for that? That's a yes or no answer as well. I mean, that's based on evidence. Of course, you have to say the evidence is there, and it looks like the Senate will be able to uncover the evidence. Number three is, will you stop this culture of attacking journalists, of red-tagging activists? Will you defund the NTF-LCAC? These are very insidious things in our society that's going on against journalists, against activists, against lawyers, for that matter, that have been killed after being red-tagged. I mean, will you stop that? It's not just a question of, I will investigate. Will you stop that?
Yeah.
So for me, these are the most important. Then, of course, the pandemic. But the pandemic, my fear about the pandemic is that everyone will have the same answer to it, right?
Yeah.
So it's a motherhood statement. It will not differentiate you.
Mm-mm. Okay. I also want to talk about Sara Duterte Carpio before we move on to Vice President Lenny Robredo. When you talk to HNP, I was able to speak with their Secretary General. They're still hopeful. And everything will be revealed come October. And they're hopeful that the president will back out of his vice presidential bid. How do you make sense of that? What do you make of that?
Well, because I've studied the family for a long time, and I've observed the family for a long time, long before they became president. I mean, I think it's a genuine disagreement. I think that Sara, certainly, Mayor Sara, do not want her father, to be the vice president, because that is very bad for her. That's bad for her electoral chances, to be honest. People don't like that. People will not vote for them precisely because of that. And it's bad for her because she won't be able to ally, for example, with Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos, who's probably the strongest combination she can have, right? Or tandem she can have, or whoever vice president she wants to take. And of course, because she also had an experience of the president, Duterte, as the vice mayor when she was mayor, she knows that she doesn't want that. Even if the vice president has no power compared to the vice mayor, the vice mayor has a lot of power. And President Duterte used that in making decisions that were against Sara's wishes. For example, the coal power plant that was built in, and possibly extrajudicial killings that were done during the time. Remember, that's going to be investigated by the International Criminal Court, 2011 to 2013. Mm-hmm. And Sara was mayor and President Duterte was vice mayor. So she doesn't want that baggage. I know that. I can see that. I mean, I haven't talked to her. I'm not privy to what they're thinking, but I can see that.
So therefore, Professor, is it also part of the scenario that you see that there will be a healing within the ruling party later on? And could we possibly see a Pacquiao Duterte ticket?
No, that one won't happen. Pacquiao is inconvenient for them because of his Mindanao votes, but he's not really. I mean, he supported Duterte, but he's not part of the Duterte Davao City camp. I mean, always remember that it's not even a Davao camp, because Davao del Norte with Speaker Alvarez and of course Davao del Sur, that's not a Duterte controlled, or South Cotabato, where Manny Pacquiao comes from, and Sarangani, those are not Duterte territory, I mean, politically speaking. So they were never really like close knit, if you can. So that's not gonna happen. What will happen, I think, is that President Duterte will withdraw either before October or by November in the switching time. And Sara will get her way, and they will all consolidate around Mayor Sara. And Mayor Sara will choose her vice president. It could be Bongbong Marcos. It could be Gilbert Chidorro, as she said. It could be
Gachalian
or Romualdez. It could be any of those people that she says has been auditioning for her. So So I don't know. But that would be my prediction. It doesn't make sense because Bongo will not win for either president or vice president, especially in Farmali. So it's just not, doesn't make sense.
I want to talk about Vice President Leni Robredo now before we go. Her soundbite said, and I'm paraphrasing now, the assurance that she's going to give the public is that she is ready to gun for the presidency if she is chosen by the United Opposition. But first a question, Professor. What United Opposition are we talking about here?
You know what? It just really just boils down. It boils down, the opposition boils down to VP Robredo and Mayor Iscoro Moreno and Senator Grace Poe, but Grace Poe will not run for president, right? But she could run for vice president. So, of Mayor Moreno, for example. But it really all boils down to that because, as you pointed out, Senator Pacquiao will not necessarily be opposition, right? Will actually be supporting the third, could be supporting the 13 certain points. If you answered, of course, all those three litmus questions, and that puts him in the opposition side, right? Especially the ICC question. But he has to explain because he was a supporter of the war against drugs. And of course, Senator Soto and Senator Lacson will have to do the same, right? But they're not positioning themselves as opposition at all. They're positioning themselves as sort of critical, but not necessarily opposition, and certainly no history for that. So this really boils down to the two of them. Now, I'm not sure what VP Leni meant. Did she meant that she has an agreement with Isko and Grace Poe together, all of that? Or did she mean Sambayan? Where she could be chosen if there is no agreement between the two, right? Then she could still be chosen. In that case, she can still say that's what I meant. But I'll be very frank that, for sure, she's the most qualified, honestly, among all. Even if she's not the most experienced, I think she has the right motivation for this, which is not for herself, but for the country. But I think it's also fair to say that among all of these candidates, she starts from the most difficult electoral position because she's been defined badly by the trolls, wrongly, evilly, even by the trolls in the last 6 years. And it will be formidable work to overturn that. So the question is, but the point is that if both Isko and Yorme and VP Leni runs, none of them will win against a Duterte candidate in particular, especially a Duterte Marcos candidacy. That is just, the numbers are not going to be there for that.
I'm sorry to cut you there, Professor, but we're going to have to leave it at that. We run out of time as usual. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you,
continue to take care. You keep safe.
I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. That was Attorney Tony Lavinia, former Dean of the Ateneo School of Government, talking to us this afternoon. From there, we're going to take a break. Still ahead, the pilot test for limited face-to-face classes gets the green light from President Duterte. The details when we return. Stay with us. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Another possible presidential aspirant, Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, reveals he recently met with Vice President Robredo and Senator Pacquiao. Meanwhile, more councillors have joined Moreno's party, Aksyon Demokratiko. For more on those stories, we now have our correspondent, George Carino. George, go ahead.
Thanks, Carmina. The confirmation made by Mayor Isko Moreno Monday morning affirmed the earlier news reports that Senator Manny Pacquiao, Vice President Leni Robredo, and Mayor Isko Moreno met last week. However, the mayor of the nation's capital politely declined to reveal details. She said it's not at liberty to discuss the details of that meeting. But he said he is open, his ears are open, and he will listen, and decisions will be made in a couple of days. But the specific decision that will be made is not yet expounded by the city mayor of Manila. This morning, Mayor Isko Moreno presided on the oath-taking ceremony of a former leader of the Liberal Party who went on board Acción Democrático. Caloocan City 2nd District Representative Ege Irice took an oath before Acción Democrático President Isko Moreno and Chairman Ernesto Ramel Jr. as the newest member of Acción Democrático. He even brought along four councillors and the former city administrator of Caloocan, and as an latest addition, as the latest addition to the Liberal Party lineup. Irice will run for the mayoral post for Caloocan next year. And he said it, it is with deep thought that he considered everything before leaving Liberal Party, where he served for the past 18 years. We must remember that Irice was the former campaign spokesman of Liberal Party during the presidential bid of Mar Rojas in 2016, and he was also the Secretary General of the Liberal Party. According to Isko Moreno, there have been fillers in the coming days for other members or for other people joining the Acción Democrático. You must remember also that Mayor Isko Moreno was not an original of the Acción Democrático, which was founded by the late Senator Raul Rojo. He was formerly with the NUP National Unity Party of former Secretary Ronnie Puno. Termina.
Right. George, just a couple of questions. First, who called for that meeting?
That is a detail that was not provided by Mayor Isko Moreno on who called which and what were discussed where. He politely declined to discuss any details of the meeting except for saying that he met with Senator Manny Pacquiao and VP Lenny Robredo. That's the only information that he provided to us.
As you know, George, there have been a lot of speculations about the mayor gunning for the presidency. But would you know if that's the only position that he's interested in? Is he open to a vice presidential post, or he's pretty adamant on the presidential position?
Actually, he has been asked on several occasions on the issue of him running for the presidency. There have been groups, Yes Isko, Ikaw Muna Pilipinas, who were asking him to run for the presidency. But every time Mayor Isko Moreno is being asked, he's always keeping his cards close to his chest. Do not want to reveal anything. And the only answer that he provides to all the questions is that decisions will be made and I will inform you as soon as a decision has already been made. The phrase "there is ample time" is always being used by Mayor Isko Moreno, but whether he considers running for VP or president, those items were not included in the discussion whenever he provides the answer to media questions.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. George Carino there joining us on the line. Take care, George. Keep safe.
Thank you. Welcome.
Moving on, the Delta variant, now the most dominant COVID-19 strain in the country as it overtakes the Alpha and Beta variants. Our very own Rafael Bosano now joins us for more details. Raf, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. You know, the Department of Health has reported that the Delta variant of concern is now the most common lineage among sequenced samples with assigned lineages. This is after 319 more samples were detected to have been infected with the more contagious Delta variant based on the latest run of genomic sequencing by the Philippine Genome Center. This is 85.3% or a great majority of the 374 total samples sequenced. Now, out of this number, only 9 additional beta and 13 alpha variant cases were detected. These are also the variants of concern, which were identified as drivers of the surge earlier this year. Now, health spokesperson Maria Rosario Vergara says all regions in the country have either an alpha, a beta, or a delta variant. In this latest run, the regions with the highest number of detected Delta variant cases are Regions 2, Region 3, 6, 4A, CAR, Caraga, and the National Capital Region. In the NCR, all cities were found to have a variant of concern. It also isn't surprising that the mentioned regions are also those which have a high risk classification based on growth rate and average daily attack rate. These regions also have a higher risk bed utilization and ICU utilization rate. Now, the public may be wondering why only 374 samples were processed by the PGC when it is expected to be able to process around 750 samples or more, especially after scaling down on RT-PCR capacity to give way to biosurveillance. Now, Berhera said this is because some of the staff in the PGC had to undergo quarantine after exposure to the virus, which resulted to the downsizing of their staff. But the numbers are expected to return to normal in the coming run, as those under quarantine are expected to complete it in the coming days. The health department continues to call on the public to continue practicing strict health protocols and as much as possible to avoid going out unnecessarily. Now, for their part, they say that strict enforcement of health standards will be done in the three C's, or these are closed and crowded areas, as well as for those who are close contacts. Active case finding and immediate isolation will continue in areas under granular lockdown, as well as monitoring of utilization rates and augmentation of its capacity. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Rafael Basuano there joining us on the line. Take care, Raf. Keep safe. And we have this just in. Government has given the green light for the dry run of limited face-to-face classes in select schools. The Education Department earlier said the pilot test would be conducted in 120 public and private schools in areas considered low risk for COVID-19. Health Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergara has also said the dry run would not be contingent on the country's vaccination rollout. The Philippines and Venezuela are the only two countries that have yet to resume face-to-face classes since the start of the pandemic. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.